Binge Mode is brought to you by DirecTV Now. Live stream your favorite channels on virtually any device. Plus, you can subscribe to HBO and start watching Game of Thrones today.
Hada!
Your Grace, I know that you want to listen to Binge Mode, but Binge Mode has adult content and...
Good.
You should head to bed.
I'm not tired!
And now, Binge Mode.
I bring them into the royal fold, and this is how they repay me, by trying to steal the key to the north out from under me.
Sansa is the key to the north? I seem to remember she has an older brother.
The Karstarks have marched home. The young wolf has lost half his army. His days are numbered. Theon Greyjoy murdered both his brothers. That makes Sansa Stark the heir to Winterfell. And I am not about to hand her over to the Tyrells.
The Tyrell army is helping us to win this war. Do you really think it's wise to refuse them?
There's nothing to refuse. This is a plot.
Hello, and welcome to Binge Mode. I'm Mallory.
Kiss my fire!
I'm Mallory Rubin, deputy editor of TheRinger.com.
Yeah.
Joining me today, now that he's finished bathing in the caves with Ygritte, it's Ringer staff writer and your maester, Jason Concepcion.
You know nothing, Mallory Rubin.
That's probably true. Jason, we swore some vows.
Sure.
We
they
are...
make you swear and swear. So and swear. Many.
We swore.
Did.
To rewatch all 60 episodes of Game of Thrones.
Oh, man.
To deep dive one at a time. Spoiler warning for all of you. We will be going deep on details from the show and the books from this season and beyond. Let's steal some swords, run into the nearest cave, and bunker down because it's time to discuss one of our favorite episodes.
Truly
one of the best episodes in Game of Thrones history.
There.
Season 3. Episode 5, Kissed by Fire. The Lord of Light isn't done with us yet. So since we are still here, let's refresh ourselves on what actually happened in this fifth installment, because it is absolutely jam-packed with excellence. Let's take a very quick trip down our own King's Road.
In the Riverlands,
trial by combat!
Lord Beric Dondarrion fights the Hound with a flaming sword. That's Thoros O'Meara's trademark. The Hound overcomes his fears of fire and the judgment of R'hllor to slay Beric. Thoros prays over his body and Beric rises again. Gendry joins the brothers as their smith. Arya is angry about it. Beric and Thoros explain the resurrection process to Arya, who asks a heartbreaking question that we'll talk about later.
Tough Arya episode.
Yeah.
A lot of heartbreak. North of the Wall. No heartbreak there, friends.
No.
No heartbreak there.
Bow, bow, bow.
John, in a tough spot.
Really tough.
Gives the wildlings some intelligence on the Night's Watch. Has to stick to the mission. Has to earn his spot. He's sticking to something else, too. And that's...
The pointy end?
This is it, guys. This is it. John... no longer a green boy, finally a man grown.
That's right.
Gets it in.
Thank God.
With Ygritte, we christen thee Wildling Sex Cave.
And Harrenhal, another bath is being taken. Jaime and Brienne arrive and are taken under the protection of Roose Bolton, who lets Jaime sweat out the results of the Battle of Blackwater Bay for a hot second there. Speaking of hot.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the baths, Jaime comes over to share Brienne's bath, and he tells her the story of how he came to slay the Mad King.
Big episode for bath time.
Maybe my favorite scene in the entire
It's
series.
Iconic. It's it really is. In King's Landing, meanwhile, fewer baths, but still plenty of activity, Cersei approaches Littlefinger about investigating the Tyrells. Maybe do a better job here than you did finding Arya Stark, bro.
Wow.
Yeah. The Knight of Flowers, meanwhile, makes the acquaintance of a handsome young fella named Olivar, who promptly fucks him and then spills all of Loras's secrets to Littlefinger, confirming the Tyrell plan to marry Sansa to Loras. Whoops. You gotta be more careful with the pillow talk. You gotta be more careful. Sansa passes up Littlefinger's offer for rescue, for escape on the ship, opting to stay in the city, confirming the intel that Olivar gave to Littlefinger, setting a counterplan in motion. Tywin, king of the counterplan, gathers Tyrion and Cersei for a meeting, tells them this: Sansa, key to the North, cannot fall into the Tyrells' hands. Tywin has a fix for this. Easy solution. Tyrion, you're going to marry Sansa. Cersei, you're going to get to gloat deliciously for 15 seconds, and then you're going to marry Loras.
Don't make me do it again. At River Run, things are bad. Lord Karstark and his men execute Martin and Willem Lannister. Rob orders them put to death. Karstark calls Rob the king who lost the North to his face.
Woof.
Karstark's men, half the army, abandon Rob. Bad decision. Rob lacks the strength to win the war and his army is in disarray. He has an idea. What if I attack Casterly Rock? How do I do that? I need men. Who can I ask? Walder Frey.
And the good news is he's not mad at you about anything, so this will go fine.
This is, hey, Walder, what's up, dude? What's going on?
Over in Dragonstone, another chill dude, Stannis,
yes,
decides to visit his wife.
Quite disturbing.
And not the kind of person you want to be spending your time with. For example, just really the only thing you need to know, she keeps her fetus collection in her bedroom.
And it's extensive.
Which is weird. Not a normal thing to do. She is a fervent believer in the Lord of Light.
Yep.
And when Stannis comes clean and admits to sleeping with Melisandre, his wife basically says, no biggie, dude. I'm good with it. If R'hllor wants it, it must be good. Stannis then goes to see his daughter, Shireen. So we're introduced to two members of his family here. She has grayscale. The first time the camera hits the side of her face, it's crushing. But she is delightful. She just
She
loves to read. She loves Davos. And you know what? We love those things too. And so we are Team Shireen forever. She wants to know where the Onion Knight is. Stannis says, he's a traitor. He's in the dungeons. Get used to it. And Shireen's like, nah.
Out in Slaver's Bay, Jorah and Ser Barristan catching up, sharing war stories. Hey, remember that time when the Greyjoys rebelled? Yeah, that was great. Barristan wants to serve an honorable ruler. It's been a long time. Mad King Robert Baratheon was a good warrior, but a terrible king. They have a low-grade pissing contest over what the best direction to take Dany in is. And now that she's freed the Unsullied, Dany is organizing them into a fighting force with battalion leaders. One of her new captains, Grey Worm, who doesn't want to change his name, by the way. Wants
lucky
to keep
name.
It.
Lucky name. Loves it. Loves it. All right, Jason.
Yeah.
Figs help move the bowels.
I've heard that.
And Oathbreaking helps move the plot forward.
I swear.
That gets us to this episode's big idea. So let's cut right to the core of it. Let's stick it with the pointy end. The defining theme of this episode is hard choices. Earlier in the show's run, Jamie taught us all a very valuable lesson. No matter what you do, you're forsaking one vow or another. This is a recurring theme in the show, but it is central in every character storyline in this episode. And in Kiss by Fire, we are reminded time and time again that that line from Jamie is the inescapable reality for almost all of these people. No choice in this world is easy. No decision is free of consequence or contradiction. And unfortunately for our boy Rob, who is looking great. Like his open vest,
that
little peak of chest hair in the middle of the night thing. He's looking great, but he's not doing great. He's faced with hard choices. The people around him are too. And unfortunately for Rob, he might not be making the right ones.
He's not. What does he do now? His men have gone against his express wishes. This is treason.
Yeah.
And when he has Lord Karstark brought before him, Lord Karstark isn't shirking away from this at all. He's like, yeah, I did it. You know why? Look at how leniently you've treated your mom who let Jaime go. He says, tell your mother to look at them. She killed them as much as I. Rob, my mother had nothing to do with this. This is your treason. It's treason to free your enemies. In war, you kill your enemies. Did your father not teach you that, boy? And the blackfish smacks him across the face. And, you know, he's right, though. And this is something that I'm not sure how Rob gets out of this. I don't think he made the right decision, but there's no good decision.
Right.
He's in a
terrible position.
He's in a terrible spot here. He can't forsake his mother. He can't put her to death. He can't turn back time either. And so, you know, what does he do? Lord Karstark says, you know, leave me to the king. He wants to give me a scolding before he sets me free. That's how he deals with treason. Oh, king in the North. And here's the dagger. This is where Rob can't turn back here.
Right.
Once Karstark says this to him, or should I call him the king who lost the north? Now you have to. It's almost like you're just blocked off now. What are you going to do? You have to execute him
internally. Even. Yeah. Like what? That's a shattering blow for.
It's a shattering.
This
blow.
Isn't just a person in the world
worse
saying
yet because
this.
Because it's true.
Right. This isn't just a person in the world saying this. That right. would be bad enough. This isn't just one of his men saying this.
Right.
This is one of his chief right. bannermen, the That's most right. important families allied to the Starks. And he knows, yeah. as you just said, that everything he's hearing is completely valid.
Yeah.
He's in basically a fucked up situation of his own and his mother's making. That's painful to realize.
Yeah.
And he's not doing a good job of coming to terms and coping and recovering from the mistakes. He's just compounding them.
And keeping with the theme, Karstark gives him no way out. Like, if Karstark right. would have been like, listen, you know, my sons, I love them. What do you expect me to do? Blah, 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 blah. Maybe Rob says, okay, well, I'll send you to the wall or I'll keep you as a hostage. And as Talisa and Kat advised him to do, Kat says, the Karstark's Northmen, they won't forgive the killing of their lord. Talisa says, Talisa coming with the good advice for once. Mm-hmm. Your mother's right. If you do this, the Karstarks will abandon you. More boys will keep dying until the war is over. You need the Karstark men to end it. But Karstark doesn't give a way out.
Right.
The thing to do that a king would do there is punish treason and punish it, with the ultimate punishment. Rob can't back out. He can't back down because he's made this decision now. He's said, I'm going to punish treason. He's let his mother off, essentially. But also, he needs Karstark. He needs him.
That's one of the keys, is that Karstark is doing this.
Yes.
This is happening because Rob was weak the first
right.
time. The
That's
first
right.
time that someone in his ranks betrayed him, went behind his back, undid one of his decisions.
Right.
He didn't let it go, but he in essence let it go. Right. It's a slap on the wrist, not a true punishment. If he does the same thing again,
right now, no one will respect him.
No one will respect him at all. His authority
That's right.
is completely shredded.
No good choice.
Right.
Here. The war is essentially done now for Rob. And his best choice that he comes up with is, hey, maybe I'll go back to Walder Frey, hat in hand, and say, sorry about that, dude.
John.
Yeah.
Things are going better for John.
Yeah,
Much better for
say.
John than they are for Rob.
However,
he is not in an easy situation.
Sure.
He is still faced with agonizing decisions, as well the kinds of choices that force him to put one vow that he's made to the Night's Watch against one promise that he's made to the Half-Hand to see this through, and of course against genuine affection that he is developing for Ygritte.
Yes.
That's a lot of competing
yeah.
stuff going on inside of him. So first test for John in this episode is that Tormund and Gareth from, you know, the British office, they're asking John for intel
right.
on the Night's Watch.
How many men on top of the wall?
Who's patrolling?
Right.
When? How many of the castles are manned? Which ones?
Right. Which, by the way, they surely know and are testing him
of
right
course.
There.
And this puts John in a terrible yeah. position because he basically has to tell them, you know, as any double agent, basically enough to get them
right.
to buy
enough
in.
Enough truth.
To trust him, but not so much that he actually jeopardizes his brothers, who he still cares about.
Right.
He wants to save those guys, not to jeopardize their lives. You can see it on his face how it pains him. What does he do? He kind of tries to split the difference, right? He tells them that only 3 of the 19 castles are manned,
true.
Which is true. But he says that there are 1,000 men remaining at Castle Black.
Which is about 3 times and change more than
yeah.
there are.
There's basically no one there.
Yeah.
Right? What do we know about this ranging mission that went north?
It was the largest in recent memory.
A lot of men.
A lot of dudes died.
And a lot of them are dead now. And they know this. They're
yeah.
pushing John. Tormund says, you know, basically, if you're lying to me, I like you, boy, but if you're lying to me, I'll gut you. And John sticks to it. He knows it's important to attempt to protect these people in any way he can. He faces another hard choice. And this one's in his pants, guys.
Whoa!
When Ygritte kind of, you know, she's defending him. He's like, I don't need you to defend me. And she sort of playfully, like, grabs his sword and runs into
the
a cave.
The classic, steal your sword and run into a cave.
Works
move.
Every time.
Yeah.
Always an effective foreplay tactic. And she says, are you still a crow? It's
Ooh.
Time you proved yourself. She's stripping down. She's shedding layers. He says, Ygritte. She says, you swore some vows. I want you to break them. I love that.
Boom.
She's No fucking around.
Break
here. Plenty of fucking, but no fucking around.
That's right.
You swore some vows. I want you to break them. I want you to make a hard choice, right? She says, I want you to see me, all of me. She's completely naked now. He says, we shouldn't. We should. And then they kiss.
Love it.
And then the Lord's kiss.
And now for an episode of George R.R. Martin reads a sex scene. I know I want you, he heard himself say, all his vows and all his honor forgotten. She stood before him, naked as her name day, and he was hard as the rock around them. He pulled her close. I love the smell of you, he said. I love your red hair. I love your mouth and the way you kiss me. I love your smile. I love your teats. He kissed them, one and then the other. I love your skinny legs and what's between them. He knelt to kiss her there, lightly, on her mound at first. But Yagreet moved her legs apart a little, and he saw the pink inside and kissed that as well. And tasted her. She gave a little gasp. You know nothing, Jon Snow. Nothing. Oh. Oh. Oh.
Just to be clear, that is real. Those are the words from the book.
That's the actual...
Jason did not make that up. That's real.
That's the real scene, guys.
True, very brief story. I read that on a subway for the first time, and I was blushing fiercely and looked next to me and saw that a very old woman was reading over my shoulder.
Nice.
Yeah. The really important questions. There's a lot of stuff in Game of Thrones that you have to, you know, parse and break down and really interrogate, because these are big ideas about the nature of good versus evil and the meaning of life, really. And there's also this. Where did Jon learn to go down on a
woman? A natural.
Where did he learn to do it?
You know that Theon probably said something about it.
Maybe so. There's a lot of like secret Theon in this episode. Like when even the Rob Karstark execution, real shades of Theon taking out Roderick. Right. And of course, you got to think that this is something Jon maybe picked up from listening to Theon talk.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
Ygritte wants to know, right? She says, that thing you did with your mouth, is that what lords do to the ladies in the South? And he says, I don't know. I just wanted to kiss you there, Rizal.
Hey, you know that
you seem to like it. I liked it some. Great stuff. And then she makes fun of him for being a virgin until that point. She calls him a maid. Great stuff. Just a phenomenal scene. So Jon did all right here. Much better than Rob.
Jaime and Brienne at Harrenhal with Lord Bolton. We don't see Roose's decision until next episode, although it's possible he's made it before then. You know, he has to grapple with the choice that presented to him. What do I do about this very valuable son of this very valuable lord who has been mangled by one of my men? I send him back to Rob. Do I execute him? Do I keep him prisoner? Do I ransom him? Do I return him to Tywin for what's sure to be a very rich reward? Choices. Jaime chooses pain over mutilation and possibly death. Qyburn. The disgraced maester.
I love when he goes,
you know, maester. They found some of my experiments too bold. Not what you want to hear from the dude who's scissoring into your stump. And of course, Qyburn, he's a completist, if anything. The safest course would be to take the whole arm. Then you'll die. Jaime says, grabs around the throat just to, you know, make sure that his point is made. And then, of course, perhaps the greatest single scene
incredible
in the series to date, Brienne and Jaime in the bath, where Jaime finally tells her what happened during the last days of Robert's Rebellion. Sack of King's Landing by his father's men. How it came that he killed the Mad King, and his tale centers on just terrible choices, choices that no one but him could possibly understand. He says how his father's men are at the gates. They want to come inside. He told the Mad King, don't let him in. This is his father even, and he's taking sides against his father. Don't let him in. I know my father. He would never choose the losing side.
Love that part.
Do not let him in. They open the gates. His father immediately sacks the city. He comes to the king again, begging him. He says, I came to the king begging him to surrender. He told me to bring him my father's head. Then he turned to his pyromancer. And of course, the Mad King had had his pyromancer stock wildfire at various places all throughout the city, under the Red Keep, under the Sept of Baelor, everywhere. Burn them all, he said. Burn them in their homes. Burn them in their beds. And so what is Jaime supposed to do? Do you let tens of thousands of people die? Your father? Do you go follow the order of your king?
Right.
That you've vowed to do this. Go kill your father. And then he says to Brienne, puts it to her. Tell me, if your precious Renly commanded you to kill your own father and stand by while thousands of men, women, and children burned alive, would you have done it? Would you have kept your oath then? And Brienne is shocked. Brienne considers it for a second and says, if this is true, why didn't you tell anyone? Why didn't you tell Lord Stark? Jaime Stark? You think the Honorable Ned Stark wanted to hear my side? And by the way, he's right about that.
Totally.
Ned is not one to give a fair hearing to reasons that a person went afoul of their vows.
Ned's not an innocent until proven guilty
that's
guy.
That's it. He's not that guy. You know, you think the Honorable Ned Stark wanted to hear my side? He judged me guilty the moment he set eyes on me. Well, maybe he shouldn't have been setting in the throne, by the way. By what right does the wolf judge the lion? And then he faints. This is the choice, really a set of choices, that has haunted Jaime his entire life and that people have judged him forever based on what he has done. But nobody's, until now, has really walked even a couple of feet in his boots to consider what they would have done in the same situation.
It's just so...
It's an amazing scene.
Haunting and gripping and it's clarifying, but it's like deeply, deeply sad, right? Yeah. Because for our entire time with Jaime as a character and for Jaime's really entire time as a person in this world...
Yes. He pushes a child out of a window.
What's his reputation? It's, you're dishonorable. Right. You don't care about your vows.
Callow, ruthless.
Ruthless, vicious, basically a murderer.
A murderer.
A man without values or honor.
A very rich murderer.
And this, the injustice of it.
Yeah.
We don't think of somebody like Jaime, who basically has it all, as being someone who suffers from injustice. But you see in this moment, it's clarifying, he really has.
Because he made a heroic choice.
Exactly. He's actually the hero in that moment.
Yeah.
He saved everybody in King's Landing. He saved all the people that his sister will thoughtlessly cast aside in later seasons. He actually has a heart. He did the right thing. It takes a type of courage to say, knowing what it will do to your reputation.
They're going to judge you the way they're going to judge you no matter what you do.
Right.
So why try?
Speaking of kind of devastating scenes.
Oh, my God.
Low-key, really gut-wrenching and agonizing.
Really subtle daggers.
Everything here that happens for Arya in this episode, both what she witnesses and discusses with the Brotherhood about resurrection and her father, and her discussions with Gendry. So what happens here? The Hound wins his duel. Beric is risen, right? Thoros brings him back. This is our first glimpse.
Hound shrugs off his shock at this quite quickly.
He's just like,
where's my money?
Yeah. You got my purse?
Yeah.
Am I good here? Can I go find my two chickens? But, and Arya, she can't believe it. She can't believe they're letting him go, right? She says, you can't let him go. He's guilty. What's the response? Not in the eyes.
Yeah.
Of God, of R'hllor, of the Lord of Light.
Of the guy who keeps bringing me back to life.
Exactly.
They're kind of
forced to honor that principle, no matter how hard the choice might be. This is unacceptable to Arya because she didn't sign up for that code. And she's devastated, confused, and what happens after that? No relief from the emotional agony. She goes to talk to Gendry, and he's making a choice of his own to stay on and smith for the Brotherhood. This crushes Arya and us watching at home. Yeah. You know, she's begging him to reconsider. She says, Rob needs good men too. We're leaving tomorrow. And then you can, and he says, what? Serve him?
Yeah.
I've served men my entire life. I'm done serving. She notes, you just said you were serving Lord Beric. And he says, this is actually really, I think, poignant too, thinking about Gendry's life as someone who never felt like he belonged.
Right.
Anywhere. He says, he may be their leader, but they chose him. These men are brothers. They're a family. I've never had a family. And then this part fucking kills me. Kills me. She's on the brink of tears and she says, I can be your family. And he says, no, you wouldn't be my family. You'd be my lady. Arya constantly rejects her own status, her own standing.
She doesn't acknowledge it.
He can't do that.
Right. No one can.
Right.
No one would be able to. The realm would fall apart.
He wants freedom.
Yeah.
he wants to belong, and Arya just wants that companionship. She's lost her family. Think about what she's been through. They're kind of talking about the same thing, actually, here. Wanting someone who loves you and wanting someone who supports you and keeps you safe. It's just agonizing. It kills me every time.
Over in Slaver's Bay, an interesting scene is playing out in that Ser Barristan is, in a lot of ways, kind of the flip side of Jaime. He made hard choices as well, but his regrets come from sticking to them, you know, not necessarily been going against his vows. You know, him and Jorah are discussing the weight of the oaths they've taken, the hard choices they've taken in the context of your life. Barristan says, you know, I burnt away my years fighting for terrible kings. And he says, you know, Robert was a great warrior, terrible king, mad king. We all know about him. Jorah says, you know, you swore an oath. And Barristan says, yes, and a man of honor keeps his vows even if he's serving a drunk or a lunatic. Just once in my life before it's over, I want to know what it's like to serve with pride. Is that Dany? I think they both think that it could be. Meanwhile, the game within the game is Jorah's trying to figure out, does Barristan know that I was a spy in the pay of Robert Baratheon?
He is, like, so not subtle when he's trying. He's, like, doing this, like, side eye, like,
Listen, Jorah, I think Ser Barristan has a little net in him in that he's not the kind of guy to pretend that he knows something that he doesn't know, or vice versa. And Dany's soldiers, you know, they have to make hard choices too. In a sense, they've already made them, but they have to decide whether to keep their names, their slave names. You know, their slave masters gave them these really kind of horrible names that, so whenever they are going to have to say their names or think about them, they have to think about this low status that they have.
They're vermin.
They're dirty dogs, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when Dany gives Grey Worm the opportunity to change his name, he says, Grey Worm gives me pride. It's a lucky name. Why? Because it's the name that I had when you showed up into my life and set me free.
It's beautiful. I wonder how White Rat feels about that. Right, things didn't work out that well for him later
on.
Not
great.
Things were not working out super well for Sansa right now either. She has a little moment with Littlefinger.
That's right.
A tough choice of her own, right? And watching this ship.
She thinks she's being a good liar here, by the way.
The bulk of Sansa season 3 is spent watching ships, by the way. And Littlefinger, he comes up and he has some ship-watching wisdom. You know, he says, strange, isn't it? What is? It doesn't matter what we want. Once we get it, then we want something else.
It's
now,
true.
He's ostensibly talking about this water vessel, but he's describing his entire life philosophy,
right?
And certainly the way he's thinking about her. And he's basically messaging this to her, though. You know, there's always another hard choice to make. You make one, and then you have to make another, partially because of your own ambition, at least in his case. And Sansa is making one now. You know, she is falling into his knowledge trap. Says, you want to go home, don't you? Of course, more than anything. But maybe it would be better to wait. I've been thinking how dangerous it would be. Not just for me, but for you. Like, come on. He's going to see right through that bullshit. He says, I hope you know that I'm your friend, Sansa, your true friend. He's testing her. She is failing. Hey, guys. Just a quick break to tell you about our sponsor. Binge Mode is brought to you by DirecTV Now. Live stream your favorite channels on virtually any device. Plus, you can subscribe to HBO and start watching Game of Thrones today. And now, back to Binge Mode.
When you've cheated on your wife, your significant other, who you haven't seen in months, do you tell him?
How about that? He's like, we lost the battle. It's like, when was the last time they saw each other?
Stannis Baratheon is faced with that choice. Yeah, well, he also says to Sharyn, my, you've grown since the last time I saw you. Like, how long do you not see your kid for them to grow? And so he has to decide. And by the way, it really, what a classic man Stannis is here, in the sense of just a small dude. You know, he's like, he was just clutching at Melisandre on the beach. Don't leave. Make me another son, blah, blah, blah. As soon as she's gone for a week, a couple days, he's just slinking back to his wife and her room of fetuses and confessing. And then there's the crazy part, which is as soon as he does, Selyse is saying, I thank God every day for bringing Melisandre to this. She gave you a son. I gave you nothing. Whoa.
Fucked up way to talk about Shireen.
Come on.
Shireen is dope.
And then he also has to choose between disappointing his daughter and sticking to his rigid sense of right or wrong. Sir Davos is a traitor. He's rotting in a dungeon cell for his crimes. Best forget him. I love the look on Stannis' face when his daughter hugs him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not used to hugs, that one. But he's seeking out that. He is on some level seeking out that kind of validation and basically human contact. You know, his best friend is in the dungeon because he sent him there. And his fiery red priestess is off looking for some
King something.
Some King's fluids. Speaking of fathers, Tywin. Not actually really hard for him to make any of these choices. It's easy for him. It's hard on the people around him. You know, he is now hip to the Tyrell plan, and he basically takes the intelligence that Cersei has gathered via Littlefinger and completely just turns around and uses it against her. You know, he wants to thwart the marriage plot that would wed Sansa to Loras, and his solution is pairing Tyrion and Sansa and Cersei and Loras. Now, his children are not happy about this at all. And how does he react? He doesn't give a shit. He literally says to them, "My children, you've disgraced the Lannister name for far too long. Basically, step up, stop complaining, do your part for that family legacy that I'm always talking about. I've made a choice you don't get to." Right. It's kind of a different thing than most people in this episode are dealing with, and it's actually a pretty interesting contrast. All right, Jason.
Yes.
We are not searching for murder. We're searching for vengeance, much like Lord Karstark. Gone too soon. We hardly knew you, dude.
Tough one.
You subbed in for Great John Umber, basically, and then you were dead. That was our experience with you. We know, having seen six seasons of this show, that this death has a colossal impact on Rob's future. But what about the Starks' past? Right on the brink of his own death, Lord Karstark hints at the strong shared history uniting these families. So to better understand how deep that history goes and what betraying that history really means for Rob, let's assemble the conclave, let's head to the Citadel, teach us everything we need to know about the Karstarks.
The Karstarks. Well, there are two major red line taboos in Westeros. One is safeguarding of guests under one's roof once they take of the bread and salt. You're not supposed to do anything to them. Mm. We'll talk about that later.
Everyone listens to that.
Everyone, most people do. And the other one is kinslaying. No man is accursed as the kinslayer, or some variation thereof, is a common saying in the Seven Kingdoms. The reasoning is as plain as the scar on Tyrion's face. Westerosi property law is based on inheritance. A lord passes his manor and intended lands down to his son, occasionally his daughter, who passes it down to his son, and so on and so forth, blah, blah, blah. This obviously creates a tremendous incentive for interfamily murdering and shenanigans. If you're the younger son, you're not getting anything. Hey, maybe I slip something into the older brother's wine and inherit all the lands. So the taboo against kingslaying acts as a strong cultural check against that. In Westeros, life is cheap. If a person can't be trusted around family, they can't be trusted, period, and therefore they are a mad dog to be cast out into the wilds and hunted. This is why Robb's execution of Lord Karstark was such an extreme step. Many would fairly construe it as an act of kinslaying. Why? Well, the Starks have been around a long time. They're probably the oldest of the great houses of Westeros. And in that time, they've exterminated or reduced to vassal status numerous petty kingdoms on their way to the top of the north. But they've also raised a few houses up from almost scratch here and there. And one of them is House Karstark, a cadet branch of House Stark. A cadet branch is a house which traces its lineage directly to the overlord's house, overlord's family. And over time, that house became a separate entity unto itself. There are several of these sprinkled all throughout the Seven Kingdoms. The Lannisters in particular have numerous cadet branches kind of seated around the Westerlands, including House Lanny, House Lannet, House Lantle, and the Lannisters of House Derry, of Derry, rather. You know, anytime you hear a Lan, it's probably related to the Lannisters somehow. So House Karstark. About 1,000 years ago, Karlarn Stark, who is a younger son of the Stark King in the North, we don't know if he was the second, third, fourth son, we don't know. So go back to 1,000 years ago, some unknown northern vassal of the King in the North rises in rebellion against the Starks. Karlarn goes to put the rebellion down, and he does that successfully. For his service and valor, the King of North grants Carlon some lands east of the, on the eastern side of the North, just south of the Bay of Seals, and there Carlon built his castle, which came to be known as Carl's Hold. Over the years, Carl's Hold became Carhold, and the descendants of Carlon Stark became the Carstarks. Stark and Carstark, as Lord Carstark said to Rob before he got his head chopped off. They are kin. They're essentially cousins. Thus, the revulsion of Lord Carstark's men and their willingness to abandon their king once this step has been taken. And if you look at the map, it's hard to not come away with the conclusion that the Starks were concerned about the Boltons and wanted to place loyal houses in such a way that they would hem the Boltons in, force them, you know, they wouldn't be able to move on the Starks without houses very loyal to them knowing. Making Rob's actions in that context perversely a weird kind of betrayal. You know, if the Starks had really set the Carholds up as a reward for loyalty, but also as a warning system against the Boltons, it adds another layer of tragedy to this action that Rob has taken.
Oh, Rob.
He was in a tough spot.
So
what
doomed.
What was he
going
to do?
So doomed.
Yeah.
I don't know. At least he's, you know, he's looking good.
He was looking good.
He's looking great. That's something. All right. It seems that our Knight of Flowers is engaged to be wed, and it seems that we're engaged to head to the Sept, guys, because it is time to bathe in the light of the Seven, share seven of our favorite insights and observations from this delightful episode. Lightning round style. You go first.
So apparently death is not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Thoros brought Beric back to life, and he brought him back for the sixth time, we learn. How about that? By whispering the Lord of Light's prayer into his ear, we'll find out we'll find out more about that later. But I think the interesting thing about it is Thoros didn't mean to do it.
Right.
It was kind of an accident, you know, and then a tragic, absolutely brutal exchange when Arya says, "Could you bring back a man without a head?" Not six times, just once.
So painful.
Thoros says, "I don't think it works that way, child." And it's just, wow. That moment.
Really
what
sad.
A dagger from Arya.
Really, really sad. Yeah. Number two, speaking of resurrection, in that scene when Beric and Thoros are explaining what's happened to Arya, and he says, "You'd think you'd learn. It's not getting any easier, you know." This is Thoros. And how does Beric respond? He says, "I know every time I come back, I'm a bit less."
Yeah.
Pieces of you get chipped away. This is important for us to keep in mind as we watch, spoiler warning here, as we watch Jon's arc in coming seasons.
Yeah.
The resurrection Caesar planning here. We are going to learn a lot more about this as soon as the very next episode of this season. But that particular idea that you come back as less than, something to watch for Jon.
Queen Selyse Baratheon, you know, like the way people like to line their walls with, you know, jars of stuff or scotch bottles or old wine bottles,
yeah, jam.
Found things. How about her jars of fetuses?
Pretty gross.
Pretty gross. And a shocking number of them.
They're also gigantic.
Yeah, weirdly huge.
More horrifying than that visual is the fact that she clearly loves those boys more than Shireen.
And by the way, wonder why Stannis doesn't show up for months at a time.
Number four,
yeah.
You mentioned this earlier when Jaime asked Qyburn where his maester's chain is and he says the Citadel stripped me of it. They found some of my experiments. Too bold.
Too bold.
What should we be thinking of here?
Oh.
Franken Mountain.
Bold experiments.
We are going to see. We are going to see these bold experiments from Qyburn put to use in foul, vicious ways.
Shireen, let's talk about Shireen for a second because she's
I'd
one
love
of the most
to.
Relentlessly sunny and optimistic people in this
Despite
story.
Despite having so many reasons not to be.
Perhaps the most optimistic person in this story. She is disfigured. People would shun her because of the grayscale. And she's just not letting it get her down. When Davos tells her that he can't reach, she says, "You can't? I'll teach you. It's easy. It'll be fun." "We can't." "Why not? What will they do? Lock us in the cells?"
Love that. Perspective.
Really?
She has more perspective than most of the adults in this world. She really does.
She just will not. And then she's like, "Here, look, Aegon. You say this. This is A and E. This makes this." She just will not stop.
The way she says "egg" is so darling. Oh my god, heart melting.
Yeah,
miss you, Shireen. Number six. Tyrion and Olenna have a nice scene here. Tyrion, you know, he's a, what is he? Browbeaten bookkeeper, guys. Got to get that coin. Master of Coin has a job to do.
So about that wedding.
He needs money. He needs money for the royal wedding. And there's a great moment in the course of this exchange where Tyrion, you know, he gets through to her. He gets the financial support that they need. And he says, yes, and we thank you for your contributions, which are quite necessary for the preservation of the realm. And Olenna's response is, as is a royal wedding. This is where she's arguing for justifying the expense, justifying the extravagance. She says, as is a royal wedding, the people are hungry for more than just food. They crave distractions. And if we don't provide them, they'll create their own. And their distractions are likely to end with us being torn to pieces. A royal wedding is much safer, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say. And you're one of the reasons why, yeah. Lady. Love this.
I love the way she flexes on Tyrion when he first comes for the money. And she's like, oh, do you mean, let's see, the bread that I have flowing in here? The armed men?
Laundry list.
She's just a laundry list of stuff that she is providing the realm. And then she's like, and now you want me to pay for the wedding.
All right. Plots are not public knowledge.
Thank you, Tywin.
Thanks, Tywin.
Thank you for
and
that.
And neither are the sexy time exploits of this week's champion.
Oh.
At least for now. Each episode, we are going to honor the person who played the game the best, advanced his or her cause in some way, or, to be totally honest, guys, had sex in a cave. That's really all it takes. This week, the winner of our champion's purse is John fucking Snow.
John F. Snow. Sex haver. Sword wielder.
They say he's a master swordsman.
Pointy end sticker.
This is
Lord's kiss giver.
Oh. This is really just great stuff from John. He loses his virginity.
Yep.
He does it in an amazing cave with a water feature.
Right.
Not just any cave. There's a water feature.
By the way, like, if you've ever smelled hot springs, that cave, when you add the body smell plus the sex smell plus, like, the sulfur coming up from these hot springs.
Yeah.
It's just everything.
I don't think he minded the sulfuric
the
water
funk.
Smells because, yeah, when she's taken off those furs,
man.
After trudging around in them for God knows how long. I mean, she actually says, right, how long till you, since you've had a bath? Like, these are not clean people.
I love
people.
The smell of you, he said. I love your red hair.
All right, great stuff from John. He
win.
He got it in. He was a giving lover,
ears
a
ringing.
Selfless lover.
Yeah.
And he, you know, fine. Yeah, he managed to dance the dance between giving
the
right amount of intel.
That will be the footnote.
All right, guys, much like John, this podcast is still fertile. Unlike Cersei, perhaps. It needs to marry, it needs to breed, because there is quite a way to go here. We hope that you had as much fun as we did.
We hope.
A lot of baths in this episode. Hard not to have fun. We hope that you will join us next time when we will be discussing Season 3, Episode 6, The Climb. Until then, just keep asking yourselves, is that what lords do to the ladies in the South?
I liked it some. No one taught you such? There's been no one, he confessed. Only you. A maid, she teased. You were a maid.